Let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith. Free speech has been an American hallmark, but not for much longer. The pressure is on to conform to the government line or else. Today on Running to Win, why Christians must both support our leaders while at the same time being free to criticize them. From the Moody Church in Chicago, this is Running to Win with Dr. Erwin Lutzer, whose clear teaching helps us make it across the finish line. Turn to 1 Peter chapter 4. Today, Erwin Lutzer continues a message on God and country, our own tough choices. Principles on how to live so as to honor Christ in a time of gathering darkness.
Thirdly, as Christians, we must support our government and at the same time feel free to criticize it. Both support and criticism are necessary. We learned that in Nazi Germany, the people in effect said, "Our government, right or wrong," and they went ahead and they gave their allegiance to Der Führer, and they even swore their allegiance to them. The pastors did. Most of the pastors did. And they simply bought into that humanistic, godless agenda, and that was all. And oftentimes the pastors justified what they were doing on the basis of Romans 13, where it says, "Powers that be are ordained of God, and we should submit ourselves to those powers. And if we are disobedient to those powers, we are disobedient to God." Well, that has to be balanced with other passages of Scripture that say with unmistakable clarity that we ought to obey God rather than men. The idea of my country, right or wrong, no matter what the government does, because I'm patriotic, is unscriptural and devastating to the future of this nation and other nations like it. Number four, we have to recognize the limits of political and social reform. There are limits. Oh, people get so excited when we have some conservatives that are elected. It's as if, you know, they're going to bring in a new day. Well, as we shall be seeing in a moment, the problems in America are much deeper than can be solved in Washington, much deeper than can even be solved in Washington by conservatives or, if we had them, very religious, God-fearing people. And as we shall see in a moment, that's where we come into the picture. Let us not be naive and think that really we can solve America's problems with a ballot box. We can help or we can hinder, but ultimately we are involved in a spiritual battle that transcends all party lines and all such distinctions. And number five, our public effectiveness, basically boils down to individual responsibility and every one of us living as Christ would have us live, right where we have been planted. You see, the truth is that each of us can stand for truth. Now, some of you know that at some point you have to draw the line. I feel so sorry for Christians who have their children in the public school system. And from time to time, some of you have come and you've asked my advice because you're in a predicament where there is occultism that is being taught or there is sexual training and sexual classes that are essentially immoral. We live in a time when everybody is going to have to decide at some point, it seems to me, at what juncture do I no longer obey the state, and what do I do if America continues to slide in the direction of the dark, cruel night of paganism? You remember Niemöller? He made the famous statement. He said, first, and of course you know that he was one of the Germans who stood up to Hitler. He said, "First they came for the socialists, and I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I didn't speak out because I didn't belong to the trade union. Then they came for the Jews, and I didn't speak out because I wasn't a Jew. And then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak out when they came for me." And that's why we must speak out for the unborn. That's why we must speak out in those areas that we may not be directly involved in, because the time will come when we will be affected, and then it may be too late. One of the exciting things about the Bible is that it has the answer for today's church and every church, no matter how long the church survives in the world. When Peter wrote the book of 1 Peter, and I want you to turn to that passage of Scripture, actually it's 1 Peter chapter 4, he was writing to a congregation that had experienced great persecution. Christians were ostracized because they refused to call Caesar Lord. They were kept from the best jobs, they were lied about, and they went through a period when being a Christian was not only difficult, in some instances it was impossible. Martyrdom was a great option, and that often happened, that people were martyred for their faith. It was a possibility. In the midst of this, he writes to them, and he does not say, "Now I want you to all get out and vote." The reason he didn't was because they couldn't vote in those days. Paul used his citizenship effectively, and we should use our citizenship effectively and be involved in all of the processes politically. But you need to understand that in 1 Peter, those were not options. Those were not options. So what he does is he begins to write to them and say, what you must do is to zero in on how you are going to live in the midst of an oppressive state. And he does not tell them, please feel sorry for yourselves, because you're going through a difficult time. The American church feels sorry for itself because most of us are very unacquainted with suffering, and that is myself included. And because of that, we see all these things and we think that they are so strange and so different. But actually, in the history of the church, suffering has always been seen as a mark of blessing. It was a badge of honor. It was a badge of honor. And sometimes we stand and we sing, oh, we're standing on the rock. And then in reality, we act as if we are clinging to our last piece of driftwood. It's as if we are just letting go and there is no hope for anything. Then all that you need to do is to open the Bible and discover that not only is there hope, but there is glory and there is challenge and there is blessing. Now, I would like to speak on 1 Peter chapter 4, and we are going to briefly look at the entire chapter. This will be a quick tour. And I'd like to take this chapter and wrap it around five words that are listed there in your notes, and suggest that what we need is a theology that encompasses these five words, that grasps the essence of his teaching. I hope that you'll go home and read this passage more carefully, because we can deal with it only very quickly in the next few moments. First of all, there is the word purity. The word purity. 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 1, therefore, since Christ has suffered in the flesh, I need to pause and say, if he suffered, why shouldn't we? We always think that we should be exempt when Jesus said that if they persecuted me, they should persecute you. Since Christ has suffered in the flesh, arm yourselves with the same purpose, the same attitude. The imagery that is used here is a military one. Arm yourselves with an attitude by which you can take the sufferings and the difficulties of life, just as Christ did. For he who has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin. It is in the process of doing that suffering that we begin to put an end to sin in our lives. And when we begin to suffer, sin becomes less attractive and our attention is riveted more specifically on God, so as to live out the rest of your lives in the flesh, no longer in the lusts of men, but for the will of God. And then he describes how the people used to live. And I think I'll take out time to read this list just to ask whether or not there are some believers here who still live this way. Notice the words, middle of verse 3. Having pursued a course of sensuality, lusts, drunkenness, carousals, drinking parties, and abominable idolatries. And he says the world is surprised that you don't do the same things that they do, and because of that, you're being persecuted. And for that, he would say, rejoice. Now here's a question. You say, well, what relationship does this have to suffering? I thought that you were going to talk about church-state relations today. It has a direct relationship. You see, the easiest thing that we can do as a church is to think that all of our problems are concentrated in some of the groups that we love to blast. And I love to blast them once in a while, too. We think it is the ACLU versus the evangelicals. It is the media versus the evangelicals. It is Washington versus the evangelicals. And it is them and it is us. Well, you know what this passage reminds us? The fact that the situation is not nearly so neat, because what you find is that the same problems that exist in the world, whom we sometimes perceive to be our enemies, are actually the same problems that are also found in our hearts. Os Guinness says, the problem with this dualism is that there is no problem in the wider culture that you cannot see in spades in the Christian church. The rot is in us and not simply out there. And Christians are making a big mistake by turning everything into a culture war. It is a much deeper crisis. Why does Peter talk about purity in a letter that is devoted to suffering? Listen carefully, because Peter knows that there is a connection between purity and power. A moment ago, I mentioned that we're in the same boat, and if somebody is drilling a hole in part of the boat over there, we can't say, well, we're unaffected, let them do their own thing. To return to that illustration, the problem is that we are drilling our own holes to let water into the boat. And one of the things that God always desires to do is to use persecution and difficulty to purify His church. And when the church is involved in these kinds of things that all of us have struggled with, God uses the furnace of affliction for purity. And so the first thing that we must do when we think about the world out there that we need to fight is to begin to look at the world in here that we need to fight. And we need to fight the world within more ruthlessly even than the world without, our own hearts and our own minds. That's where we are to begin in our struggles with the state.
And of course, the question of obedience to the state over against obedience to God is one that has been faced by the church for many years, but perhaps it comes most clearly into focus in Nazi Germany. That's why I've written the book entitled Hitler's Cross. Some of the chapters are entitled God and Hitler, Who Was in Charge? The Religion of the Third Reich, The Anti-Semitism of the Third Reich, The Church is Deceived, The Church is Divided, The Church is Dismembered. Lessons for Us. And by the way, this is the second to last day that we are making this resource available for you. We think it will help you as you analyze what's happening in our country and prepare for our future. Ask for the book Hitler's Cross, and thanks in advance for helping us.
As darkness gathers, believers in life's race need to work together in purity and humility to advance the cause of Christ at high personal cost. Next time, join us for more of God and Country, Our Own Tough Choices. These sober lessons are summarized in Erwin Lutzer's compelling book, Hitler's Cross. It traces the path of the broken cross of the swastika and points us to parallels between that time and ours. This book will be sent with our thanks for your gift of any amount to support Running to Win. For more information, call us toll-free at 1-800-215-5001. That's 1-800-215-5001. Online, go to offerrtw.com. That's offerrtw.com. Or write to us at Running to Win, Moody Church, 1635 North LaSalle Boulevard, Chicago, Illinois, 60614. Running to Win is a ministry of the Moody Church.